Here we go.
Welcome to Meta Call episode 211, take two. I apologize profusely for my antics last week. Daryl, I don't even know if you knew this, but I failed. We recorded an episode, I got it posted, and then someone was like, I don't know if you guys are aware, but your episode just cuts off at 3 minutes. And I was like, oh crap. Because at that point, I knew that it was a problem that I could not fix. So when I went back to try,
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Who's our editor?
I am our editor.
Never mind then. I was going to say, whoever our editor is, fire that guy because he sucks. But since it's you, I guess I will recant my statement.
You didn't know that I've been editing these episodes for 4 years? No, How long into this?
I figured you did it for like the first year and a half, but like once we started getting sponsorship money, I figured you might have farmed out the editing and the website.
Oh, no. I do it all. I do it all in-house, my friend.
Look at this. I figured you might have wanted to lay off that and have some more time to do school things.
Yeah, no, it's all me, and I screwed up. But part of the problem is when you got one of those MacBook Pros from 2011 or whatever, there's only about 128 gigs of free space.
Dude, okay, have a question, man.
Yeah.
How old is your phone? We're gonna put the viewers through this because I'm gonna make
my phone.
Yeah, how old is your phone?
I don't know. It's an iPhone 7. I'm like 3 or 4 generations behind on that. I usually get the oldest one I can buy.
So that means you're 3 or 4 years behind. If your phone is newer than your computer by at least 5 years, you need to upgrade your computer.
Now, listen, my computer works perfectly fine. It just is limited on the free space. But it's a MacBook Pro. It's legit.
Then why don't you go to an Apple store and get them to put a new hard drive in it?
Yeah, I don't think – maybe this is a conversation for off the cast, but I don't think it's possible with this.
I know. This is me heckling. So that the fans can know that I'm not always nice to you.
Oh, yeah. You're a generally pretty nice person, so I think that they know it comes from a place of love. And this comes from a place of passion for this podcast being the best that it can be. So, yes, we strive for greatness here. And to get there, it requires a new hard drive. One day. Anyways, speaking of greatness, one of the sources of greatness here is our sponsor, ManaTraders.com. Thank you to ManaTraders.com for supporting this podcast. You can use the promo code CardKnockLifePodcast, all one word, no hyphens, no spaces, nothing, just CardKnockLifePodcast, all one word, for 14% off your first 3 months at checkout. That'll get you a wonderful subscription to their great service. And you can rent, well, maybe not immediately, but shortly, Caldime cards, because there are lots of great ones to test with. Maybe you want to try out a Tybalt's Trickery deck. Maybe you're a madman. Maybe you want to play a deck that has damn near 50 lands in it. I don't know. I don't want to do that. I don't want to play a Tybalt's Trickery deck.
I don't even know what that card is.
Oh, God, Daryl. Really?
Yeah. All right.
Well, we're not going to talk about it today because it's red, but I think we have to address it. It's the elephant in the room these days because Tybalt's Trickery is the combo piece du jour, and it's the card that like is making waves. You know, there's always one that within days of the set being legal, someone's already discovered some really nasty combo. Remember when Garuda came out and we were like, oh God, I can't handle this Garuda nonsense. Tybalt's Trickery is kind of it for Kaldheim, and Tybalt's Trickery is 1 in a red, instant, it's a rare, counter target spell, choose 1, 2, or 3 at random, its controller mills that many cards, then exiles cards from the top of their library until they exile a non-land card with a different name than that spell, they may cast that card without paying its mana cost, and put the exiled cards on the bottom of their library in a random order. So you play like a free spell such as Stoneclaw Serpent, and upgrade that into an Ugin, the Spirit Dragon, with your Tybalt's Trickery. And the good news is you can pretty much mill yourself into oblivion because, you know, might as well, right?
So it casts a spell, right? So this is definitely like a thing that like there might be some sort of Eldrazi nonsense in Modern, like cast your Emrakul.
By the way, I mean mull yourself into oblivion until you find this. But so it casts a spell, it says, non-land card with a different name, they may cast it. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so we're looking at like a blue-red control deck that like plays an Emrakul, and
well, you're talking like modern now. I was talking standard, but and it's happening in all sorts of formats, right? And it's not like it's taking over the metagame, but it's a pretty egregious turn to win.
It's just a thing that can happen, yeah.
And it's a stupid deck. It's like some of these decks are running like 40, 50 lands. It's just nonsense. So,
wow.
Anyways, I digress. Because today we're going to start our picks game with white, blue, and hopefully we'll get to black today. I think we can do it. We're efficient. But typically we talk about our picks for Modern and Pioneer, but Pioneer is all but dead these days. No one's really able to play in paper, and there really isn't any support for digital Pioneer with the exception of MTGO. Did I mention Mana Traders is a good source of rental for that? However, I know that a lot more people are playing Historic than Pioneer. So while Modern has already developed quite a bit of popularity, Pioneer really didn't have the chance to get itself off the ground due to the pandemic. So I think we're going to kind of shift gears here. We'll continue doing our picks for Modern cards, as we always do. But then we're going to commit to what we expect to see play in Historic as well. And I have to say, I am the Historic player in the group. Daryl, I know, hasn't had a ton of experience with Historic, but I think Daryl is pretty well aware of the power level of that format. And for those of you who similarly don't play a ton of Arena, I'll just give you a quick catch-up on what the, like, maybe, like, 8 or 9 decks are that show up in the format, because it's pretty relatable to... It's kind of a weird blend between Standard and Modern, honestly. It has cards that are older than Pioneer, and then this kind of weird window that is, like, a gap between the older formats and the most recent formats. But, of course, there's Uro, right? There's an Uro mid-range deck, Sultai. There's a Gruul aggro deck, which is just beat you down with Burning Tree. Is it Emissary or Shaman? Shaman, I think. Emissary. And then, you know, like basically usually that into like Gruul Spellbreaker, Kazandu Mammoth or something. Questing Beast is a big deal in that one. Embercleave. Excuse me. Then there is a lot of Goblins. Of course, we know our friend Muxus is a big deal for Mono Red. Pretty much wins on the spot if you can get up to 6 mana and cast a Muxus, resolve a Muxus, I should say. There is a Jun Sacrifice deck. Jun Sacrifice uses the Cat Cauldron combo to just nug your opponent repeatedly, paired with like Mayhem Devil to like ping them off. Rakdos Arcanist is like the closest to a Modern deck that they come. It's very cool. Luris in the sideboard is your companion. And it just basically abuses Dreadhorde Arcanist to continuously use some of the best one drops like Thoughtseize, Village Rites, Claim the Firstborn, Bloodchief's Thirst, and also Fatal Push. And then there's an Azorius Control deck that is kind of like the control deck, but there's really not a ton of control in Historic. So people try it, and we'll see if this set helps, because there are quite a few spicy little control pieces in this set. So aside from that, everything else is a little bit fringe. Orzhov Aura sees some play. There's some Rogues decks. In Dimir, there's a white and green deck that's kind of like the Hate Bears of the format, but it doesn't have nearly as many like Leon and Arbiter type of lock pieces. It's a little more aggressive. And then some flying like spirits and stuff like that. So pretty diverse, kind of about as diverse as like Modern looks in terms of like different varieties of decks and different styles of decks, but it really is lacking in that control category at the moment. All right, okay. So there you have it. So we're going to start with white, and we're going to do some picks. Well, I've curated a list of cards that I think we should consider, basically leaving a lot of the draft cards off of the list, so we don't really have to bother with those. But I'll start us off with Divine Gambit. And Divine Gambit is a card that isn't uncommon. It is white-white for an instant. Sorcery. It says, exile target artifact, creature, or enchantment an opponent controls. That player may put a permanent card from their hand onto the battlefield. Show and tell. Daryl, what do you think? White-white for a sorcery.
A player or an opponent?
That player may put a permanent.
Okay, so it's target permanent, non-land permanent. That player may put a permanent. This is certainly going to get played in Modern, isn't it? Like, this is actually going to tell you right. Like, you just, like, play a zero drop, and on turn two, you cast this thing, you target your zero drop, and you put your big dumb thing in play.
Well, no, I'm sorry. It says exile target artifact creature or enchantment in opponent control. So you can only target an opponent's thing.
Okay, I asked about that, and you said no, it was a player.
I didn't understand your question. It says that player may put a permanent, but yeah, the wording's a little weird.
Okay, so
yeah, and notably, it doesn't hit planeswalkers either. So strictly removal.
Put a planeswalker into play, so that feels bad. Can they put a land into play also?
Any permanent, yep.
Yeah, this is not good enough, I don't think, then. Just too many things that could really go wrong.
Yeah.
Like, pretty non-conditional removal is nice for creatures that also does other stuff, but, like, them being able to put a planeswalker or an Ugin or something terrifying into play is just too many things that could possibly go wrong.
I thought they didn't make cards with drawbacks anymore. I'm confused by this one. You know? Like, we remember the days of, like, Jazam Jinn and stuff where, like, they were, you know, like, you paid for a creature and the creature was, like, kind of powerful, but it had, like, some disadvantage to it. Like, this card has some big disadvantage to it. And not only that, but it's also a sorcery, which is a pretty big drawback. I don't see why this couldn't be an instant. I really don't think that would be too powerful. But what the hell? I think this is pretty awful, to be honest with you. And this kind of feels like it's supposed to be this big flashy piece of white removal that white's been waiting for, and it just is not delivering for me. And I've never played the card. I've never cast the card. I've played quite a bit of Kaldheim Draft so far. But I honestly haven't even really been inspired to play much white in Kaldheim Draft. The white is not a bad color in the set, but it's just it doesn't really appeal to me what it's doing. So I'm going to pass on this one in both formats.
Yep, same here.
Though it is a nice political tool for EDH, because you can, you know, give your teammates some advantage because they're still considered an opponent. Okay. Doomscar is up next. I think we have some strong opinions on this. We did talk about this one on the podcast. However, I think this was one of the podcasts that didn't make it. This was the one we did last episode and got destroyed. Doomscar is 3 white for a sorcery. It's a rare. Destroy all creatures. But it has foretell. So you could cast this at the cost of 1 white as long as you've previously paid the 2 mana to put it in the foretell zone, the foreshadow zone, or whatever you want to call that.
the future zone.
The future zone, yeah.
The twilight zone, I don't know. This card's extremely good for both formats. Like, I think it's going to be a card because it can be played on turn 3 if you foretell it on turn 2. Like, it's going to be a card that people are going to try. So it may not be better than Supreme Verdict or Terminus in Modern, but, like, just based on the ability for it to be, like, this turn 3 hedge against super aggressive decks, it's going to get tested for sure.
Yeah.
And so whether or not it's going to supplant Supreme Verdict as the ultimate wrath in Modern, I don't think that'll happen, or Terminus. Like, it won't supplant either of those things, but it is going to get played for sure.
Now,
and I think same for story. It might not supplant Wrath of God, but the potential upside is so large that I think it will see play.
Yeah, I'm glad you remember that. Wrath of God is legal in Historic due to being reprinted into the Amonkhet Remastered. So it's interesting because that is a really powerful Wrath spell that normally wouldn't be available to that format based on its age, but it was just one that's kind of like been shoehorned in there. And the difference between like 3 and 4 mana, or like effectively 5 and 4 mana, you know, because your total output is 5, is pretty similar. So like the question is like, how much do you want to commit to doing this act of killing all the creatures, and how soon do you need it?
Yeah.
Historic is not inherently super aggressive, with the exception of the Goblins deck and the Gruul aggro deck. So like there's not necessarily like a need to like wipe like mono red prowess style decks like there is in Modern as early as like turn 3. But there's also not a whole lot else going on turn 2 that you're going to be missing out on, because a lot of the counter spells are like pretty awful, like Censor. They're playing Censor. So you miss your opportunity to play Censor, basically.
Yeah, I'm not. Don't really feel bad about that.
Searchres Kanta, Baffling End, things like that. So that is a detriment, and that's a non-zero. So it's something to consider. But I will also pick this for both formats because I think this card is just very good.
I think it's too good to say no to.
Yeah. Glorious Protector is 2WW for a 3/4 Angel Cleric. It's a rare. It has Flash and Flying. It is kind of like a poor man's Restoration Angel, because when it enters the battlefield, you may exile any number of non-Angel creatures you control until it leaves the battlefield. It also has Foretell, 2WW. So effectively, this is excellent Wrath Protection, whereas Restoration Angel just basically blanks one single removal spell. This can do the same thing, but can also just negate an entire Wrath.
This has Flash, yes?
It has Flash, yeah.
I think this is playable in some sort of historic white creature deck. I don't think this is good enough for Modern, though. I don't think... Like, I think just the cost of 5. Like Foretell, like, it being 5 and, like, having to pay 3 mana, I don't think is going to be good enough.
Yeah.
And are you really interested in playing this above Restoration Angel at 2WW instead of 3WW? I mean, like... Does that matter to the decks that are playing this?
Yeah, I don't think the Foretell really matters, to be honest with you. It's one of those things where, like, the base advantage to it is, like, late game. Like, you can pay 2 and you're not ready to use it and just hide it from discard. You know what I mean? Because, yeah, like, it's not something that you really are worried about rushing out there. Like, it's kind of like a later game spell. And it's not something that, like... you wouldn't just be leaving mana open when you're predicting the Wrath anyway. So the difference in that one mana that you're saving, that one mana discount, is probably not that big of a deal. However, if you're, like, drawing it late game, and then your opponent's, like, top decking, like, Thoughtseize, it's a little better, because then you can time it out when you actually want to play it, and you don't just have to cast it out of necessity. You do not just have to, like, discard it.
Yeah, you can just Foretell it, and... Like, the problem is it's the only Foretell card in your deck, so your opponent knows what it is, but, like, does that matter? I don't think so.
No. No, it doesn't. There might be more. I don't know. No, I guess maybe it is the only one. So, all right.
Yeah, no, it's the only one.
Okay, then...
Historic?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Deck? Excuse me?
Does this see play in the White Weenie deck in Historic?
The thing? Soul Sisters deck?
Yeah, or the Hate Bears deck, whatever you're calling it.
Yeah, it's possible. There's a lot of tokens. Well, there are some tokens in that deck. But yeah, I think this could work in Soul Sisters. It's a little mana intensive for that deck. The Hate Bears deck, possibly. I don't really have a lot of experience with that green-white Hate Bears deck. I haven't seen it a ton, but possibly also. I'm picking it for Historic because I think there's a good chance that people experiment with it in either location. But I don't know that we're going to see it, like, long-term.
I don't think we'll see it in Modern much at all.
No.
And I think people will play it in Historic enough that it will tick up. And I don't know how we're measuring the Historic meta. Is it, like, gets to Challenger or whatever the Challenger equivalent is? Mythic, I think.
Oh, what?
How are we measuring the prevalence of the Historic cards? Because for, like, Modern, we measure with 5-0s. Is it, like, in a Mythic deck?
Oh,
like
the Challenges? Yeah, there are plenty of historic events that we can use for those. Oftentimes, people will just, like, organize events through the MTG Melee and stuff like that. I'll consider all those results.
Okay, I wasn't sure if we were doing those results or if we were saying, here's a deck that someone posted that made it to the Mythic rank that plays this card, like, on the ladder. I didn't know, like, what we were using as a measuring stick for that.
Yeah. Speaking of, for those that aren't familiar with our picks game, the way that we do this is when we pick them for a format, we'll check then when the next format is out. By the way, I still have to tabulate our last format's results, Zendikar Rising, and I'll do that for next podcast. But we'll then consider which of these cards are actually appearing in those decks over the course of, you know, that usually it's like 3 months or so between the sets. And award credit based on that fact. And so at this point in time, we've got a slight advantage, Daryl, from our previous. It's 2-1. Is that right? Maybe you're killing me. Is it 3-0? No, 2-1. Yeah.
3-0.
Yeah, no, I got you in Ikoria. Don't you worry.
Oh yeah, that stupid format.
But we'll see what happened with Zendikar, and maybe I tied it up. I don't know. I don't even remember what we said. That seems so long ago. All right, that brings us to Halvar, God of Battle. This is a mythic. It's a legendary creature god. It's 2WW for a 4/4. Creatures you control that are enchanted or equipped have double strike. At the beginning of each combat, you may attach target aura or equipment attached to a creature you control to target creature you control. Basically, it moves in aura or equipment. But it's got a flip side, and you can also cast it as an equipment, 1WW for Sword of the Realms. And that says, equipped creature gets +2/+0, and it has vigilance. When a equipped creature dies, return it to its owner's hand. The cost to equip is 1WW.
Just because it has, the front side alone is not going to see play.
Yeah, agreed.
But the back side is so strong, like, in a creature-based deck, that, like, yeah, this thing's going to see a lot of play in Historic, I'm sure. I think people will try it in Modern. I just, like, what is it, 2 to cast, 2 to equip?
Yeah.
That's pretty good in, like, a Soul Sisters type deck. I just don't think there's a good way to tutor it up. This guy was 3 mana, and you could hit it off Collected Company. You still had to put the god in play. You couldn't put the flipped side in play. So I guess not that good. I don't know if we'll see Modern play. What do you think about Modern play? I think it's 100% Historic as a staple for the White Weenie deck.
I'm honestly not convinced that it's going to see Historic play. But yeah. I agree it's a really good card. I'm confused about it because the, like, +2/+0 and Vigilance is just kind of like meh, right? Like, if you can put it on a flyer, it's a big deal. Obviously, when an equipped creature dies, return it to its owner's hand is the biggest aspect of it, the most valuable aspect, because you can just keep ETBing with that creature. But I'm not sure, like, where it fits, you know? Equipment's just so hard to evaluate. And if this had a more appealing front side.
I think it's just a good source of card advantage against, like, control decks. Like, against your control deck opponents, you just, like, put this out there and you just one threat at a time until they kill it with the equip on the stack. You just have a threat that they have to answer that's dealing a quarter of their life total every turn.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm gonna pass on it in both formats.
I'm going to take it for Historic 100%.
Okay, all right. Next up, I think this is my favorite card in the set. If that's a spoiler for my picks, I don't care. This is Redain, God of the Worthy. This is a rare. It's 2WW for a 2/3 legendary creature god. It has flying and vigilance. Snow lands your opponent's control enter the battlefield. Tapped. Non-creature spells your opponent's cast with converted mana cost 4 or greater cost 2 more to cast. Take that also. And then the flip side is Valkmira, Protector's Shield, 3WW for a rare legendary artifact. If a source an opponent controls will deal damage to you or a permanent you control, prevent one of that damage. And whenever you or another permanent you control becomes a target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, counter unless they pay 1. That's a lot of text. That's a lot of stuff.
That is a lot of stuff. So it's a mini Frost Titan effect on the backside.
Yep.
And it's an Orbs of Warding, correct?
Yeah, part of it.
Pretty close, part of it. And then the front side is Snowlands under tapped and cannot cast DMC 4 or less, or 4 or more.
Unless they pay, 2 more. They cost 2 more.
2 more, so.
Okay. Yeah, so it's like a bad teak. It's like just like a weakened version of all of the hate bears you already see. Like, only the Snowlands are tapped rather than all their non-basics.
Well, I mean, the Snowlands are pretty relevant. Like, it's actually a punish for basic lands. So, like, that's not something we see very frequently. And that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that being a thing is actually very important, especially in, like, against the Uro decks, because the Uro Snow decks, like, if you can do something like this and Thalia together,
yeah,
like the 3-mana Thalia, all of their lands are in the battlefield tapped always, and so, like, you're creating tempo advantage as the game goes on, but is 3-mana too late for that tempo advantage? It might be, so I'm not 100% sure about that, how good that's going to be, but I think just all the pieces together make it a modern playable card as, like, a 1/2 of.
Yeah.
And then, is this just, like, broken Historic? Because it's, like, I'm going to borrow a word from Yu-Gi-Oh! It's a stun card. Like they can't cast their card on time, and so like stunning them for a turn or two to keep them from wrathing you in your white weenie deck is just like game over.
Yeah, it's pretty exceptional. I mean, the removal in Historic against decks that play Wrath is not great. For dealing with a 2/3/3 mana flyer, that is. So I think that, like, especially if you're playing like earlier drops that like will be, you know, enticing the Wrath on four, you're going to be already kind of like demanding that they cast their 1/1 removals, and then, you know, like the hope is that they can like finish off with like a Wrath spell. This guy is like, yeah. Oh yeah, that plan is just screwed, right?
Yeah, also bad.
Yeah, so I think it's very good in Historic. I'm not sure how many decks in Historic are going to utilize the snow land, because the incentive for snow is not really there in this set, I don't feel. Whereas like in Modern, we've got a lot more to do with it, like with the Ice Fang Codals and like Scred and stuff like that. And just generally, I don't know, just like dirtying up your mana has more advantages in Modern. So that part might not matter so much, but this just is super versatile, if you ask me. And I think that the fact that it's just like a little bit of a downgrade to a lot of cards that would already see play on the sideboards, I don't see why you wouldn't just put this in your main deck and be like, hey, this is a really, like, this is a very serviceable attacker, blocker, sideboard, silver bullet, everything, and it just, like, fits in my deck.
Yeah, like, this is just playable main deck, and when it's a mediocre 2/3 that, like, that even the backside does nothing, you just sideboard it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm going to pick it in both formats. I don't think it's going to be, like, a full 4 of in either one, but, you know, like a 2/3 in Historic, probably like a 1/2 in Modern. It's just kind of like a, it's kind of like a Mize in Modern to me. Like, you might as well try it, and when it's going to be good, it's going to be great. And so you'll be happy you included it. Okay. What's that?
I agree with that.
Okay. Resplendent Marshall. This guy, I think we talked about a little bit on a cast that did make it through production. This is 1WW for a 3/3 Angel Warrior. He's a mythic. When it enters the... Oh, it's got flying. When it enters the battlefield or dies, you may exile another target creature card, another creature card from your graveyard. When you do, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control other than Resplendent Marshall that shares a creature type with the exiled card. When it enters the battlefield or dies, so you get to activate it twice. It's like a double anthem. And it's a 3-mana 3/3 flyer? Like,
right.
That's really good.
But it's like shares a creature type is the hard part.
Yeah, so you just like put it in like a tribal deck. Right?
Okay, sure, but how many white tribal decks are in Historic?
Well, I'm not thinking of Historic.
I mean, humans, but
there is a humans deck in Historic. And there is a spirits deck in Historic. And I think there could be an angels deck if you try hard enough. I don't think this necessarily belongs in an angels deck. I think we want a more go-wide strategy. But Spirits is a deck. And this guy is Collected Company Ubble. However, he's not
a
spirit.
Oh, it's a 3-mana spell. I forgot about that. I thought it was a 4-mana spell for some reason.
It is indeed.
Yeah. Collected Company with this guy is very good, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know. 3 is pretty crowded. It's pretty cluttered for Spirits. So it might not see play.
Like, the problem for me with that idea is, like, you're just assuming that your creatures die. So, like your creatures have to die for this card to be relevant, right?
Yeah.
So, in the racing matchups, this card is just a big old blank.
Yeah.
And then, like, in the control matchups, is it going to be a blank because, like, your creatures need to be targeted, right? Like, they need to die. So, like, if the control decks are killing all your creatures, you're not going to have things to get counters.
Yeah, this probably doesn't belong in a deck that's already established, like an established tribal deck. But instead, I think maybe there's there's some kind of build for it. But even then, I don't know. It's like so conditional, and I think there's too much that has to go right for it to work well. So it's probably a pass. Like you just want the Empyrean Eagle instead of this guy for Spirits.
So do you think it's playable in Historic?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm out then. because I didn't think it was playable in either, but the way you were talking, you're making it sound like it was, and I was getting confused.
Well, I'm excited about the card. I think it's a really cool card, and it's definitely powerful, but all cards are just so damn powerful these days. It's like, you know, and that's how they're meant to do this to us.
I believe the word you're looking for is power creep.
Yeah, I believe the word I'm looking for is that Hasbro money.
Get them dollars.
Yeah. So I skipped a few because I didn't think there were quite a few like kind of bad white rares around this chunk of the alphabet. This one I thought was pretty good though. Sigrid God-Favored is one white for a human warrior. It's a legendary creature. It's a human warrior. It's a 2/2 flash, first strike, protection from god creatures. When Sigrid enters the battlefield, exile up to one target attacking or blocking creature until Sigrid leaves the battlefield.
Okay, so you want a flash fiend hunter. You're human.
I just put it out there. That's all.
I mean, I'm asking. You're the guy that plays decks like humans more than I do.
But is Fiend Hunter a player human?
Fiend Hunter's human.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you interested in a Flash Fiend Hunter, or are you more interested in Deputy of Detention?
I'm definitely more interested in Deputy of Detention for Modern. I think that Fiend Hunter's already been axed from that deck in favor of Deputy and Skyclave Apparition.
That card. I was just giving you the human one, because you said human like it was a big deal. So I was just giving you the equal comparison of here is another human.
Well, Humans is a deck in Historic, too, and I think that this one probably is worth trying in there. It sucks that it's a legend, though.
Yeah, that you can only Fiend Hunter one thing at a time?
Yeah, that's really awkward. Like, you're going to find the second copy and you're like, damn, I need this removal, but I can't do it without giving them back the other thing I'm detaining.
Right, but isn't it often the fact that the first thing you're Fiend Huntering is worse than the second thing you're Fiend Huntering, so you don't really mind giving them the first thing back?
I guess, but I don't want to have to make that choice. I just want them all gone.
I mean, that's fair. I'm not saying wrong about that. I'm just saying that. You know, maybe we consider that part.
Perhaps it's a one of. You know, it's just like throw it in. Anyways,
I think it's literally unplayable.
All right. Well, I'm gonna pick it for Historic just because I think it's I think we squeeze it into that Humans deck.
Okay. Well, you can certainly try to squoze it in wherever you want.
Oh yeah, I thought that was a bit of a meme that we had going.
It was a meme that has died recently, but I brought it back. It has been resurrected.
Recently, I haven't heard squoze in a long time.
Yeah.
All right. Blue. That's all for white, unless you got more.
No, I'm good.
I didn't even want to talk about this angel card. It's like a bad entreat.
Just don't.
Okay. All right, blue. I put this guy on the list because I've been playing him in limited, and he's really powerful in limited. Alrund, God of the Cosmos. Three blue, legendary creature god is a 1/1. Gets +1/+1 for each card in your hand and each foretold card you own in exile. At the beginning of your end step, choose a card type, then reveal two cards, then reveal the top two cards of your library. Put all of the cards of the chosen type into your hand and the rest in the bottom of your library in any order.
Okay.
And the flip side is a raven called Haka Whispering Raven, a legendary creature bird. 1 in a blue for a 2/3 flying. When it deals combat damage to a player, return it to your hand and scry 2.
That side seems kind of bad. You said it's a 3/3 flyer for 3?
It's a 2/3 flyer for 2.
That's a little better. 2/3 for 2, hit, scry 2, and then you get the front side of putting cards in your hand, card advantage. So, like, yeah. You're enabling yourself, and the front side is a 3-mana spell?
The front side is a 5-mana spell.
Oh, that's not enabling itself. It takes so long.
Quite expensive. But the raven part, like, you can just ride the raven for a while, you know, 2-mana. And it's a very good blocker when you're not attacking. It doesn't need to be doing that. But when you're ready to cash in, you just scry. You know, you just cash in and scry, then you flip him into a 5-drop.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty reasonable.
So it's an awkward, like, it seems very clunky when you just look at the 5-drop guy and you're like, oh, this dude's like probably like a, you know, like a 3/3 for 5 that like might draw me a card at the end of the turn. Yeah. But like the other side of it, like kind of just curves out well with the front side. And in a pinch, it's like, yeah, that card advantage is probably pretty damn good. Like you say, instant, you get two, you know, two removal spells or two counter spells in the late game, and you're rolling.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems good.
So, I don't know. It might just be too strange, too weird, and too random to be played in either, but I like the card. So, I'm going to pick in Historic. No, I'm not. I'm not going to pick. What am I doing? I'm not going to pick this card in either format. But I thought we should talk about it. You want it? Did I talk you into it?
No. No chance. It has no chance. Zero chance in hell.
All right, cool. Let's go on. I don't know if Annul is new to Historic, but I'll just mention that it's in this format or in this set. Annul is counter target artifact or enchantment spell. It was a big popper player for a long time and might be good enough for Historic if it's not already a part of Historic. It might have already been a part of Historic. But we'll keep moving. Ascendant Spirit is the figure of destiny in blue. It is a snow creature spirit for one blue. It's 1/1. Yeah. You can pay snow, and it becomes a 2/3 spirit warrior. You can pay snow. If it's a spirit warrior, it gets flying and becomes a 4/4 spirit warrior angel. And then you can pay snow. And if it's a spirit angel, put 2+1/+1 counters on it and gains. Whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. This is the incentive to play snow if you needed it. But is it good enough?
I think this is good enough for Historic, for like the mono blue decks, right?
Oh yeah, the mono blue decks. I didn't consider that. That's a good point. That is a very good point. Yeah, because I mean, you can do this at the end of the turn.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, it's Figure of Destiny. Yeah, it's just like, and every instance of the card draw stacks. So like, if you activate it a second time, you get to draw two cards when you hit with it.
Yeah.
So I feel like this figure of destiny that does that is totally good enough for Historic mono blue tempo decks. Modern, I think it's too slow.
Yeah, definitely too slow for Modern. I was going to totally bail on this guy. I'm glad you went first because mono blue is probably the only possible place for it. I don't see it seeing play in the Spirits deck in Historic or Modern. I don't know if it even sees play in mono blue because it doesn't have flying. I think you want your one drop to have evasion so you can get in with the curiosity on the second turn. But maybe like just in some small numbers, like this is just a good mana sink for those games where you just get flooded.
Doesn't this get flying when you pay two?
No, you have to get
so you pay three.
Second mode, yeah. So you're going to be sinking six mana onto this before it flies. So it's like a bad Terramander if you consider it that way, and like they don't even really play Terramander, so
right, but like Terramander you don't have to pay like this Terramander, you don't have to pay the whole cost up front on turn like three. Terramander's a little better on the later turns. But this also can just carry your curiosity early. If you know it doesn't fly, it can carry your curiosity early if your opponent doesn't put a ground creature into play.
So can Terramander.
That's true, and Terramander flies all the time, so
yeah. I think Terramander's better. I'm gonna reject my H.
I'm gonna buy it.
Okay. All right, and then I put this next one on the list. What's that?
Stand by my man.
Okay. I put the next one on the list because I know you brought it up in the past, and I think you were pretty high on this guy. Avalanche Caller is the one in a blue human wizard. That's a 1/3. It has an activation that's 2. Target snow land you control becomes a 4/4 elemental with hexproof and haste until end of turn. It's still a land. Do you still like this one?
Still like it for the mono blue tempo deck.
In
just like having historic.
Historic.
Just like having a guy that makes 4/4s, like being able to get in with multiple creatures or making blockers if need be for like reasonably sized creatures. Because like three power creatures is tough for mono blue to beat. So being able to make 3 power creatures and still use counter spells is pretty, or 4 power creatures and be able to still use counter spells is pretty strong. So,
yeah, I'm not about
you just target your lands that can tap, so that you don't get totally screwed.
Yeah, I'm not about risking my lands for combat. And that deck has to leave up a lot of mana for counter spells and protection for your creatures too.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
I don't know. 4-4 is a non-zero. I don't know. I'm going to pass on this one.
Okay.
All right. Next is Behold the Multiverse. It's a common. 3 and a blue for an instant. Scry 2, then draw 2. It has Foretell, 1 and a blue. We talked about this a little bit. I compared it to 4C, or I think it was 4C, which is a sorcery speed. Scry 4, then draw 2, I believe. And this one obviously has the advantage of being an instant and has Foretell. So you can compare it to like Glimmer of Genius. Thank you. That's one. But with the upside of like, we don't care about the energy, but we could just like put this on layaway early on if we have nothing better to do with our 2 mana. And I think that's really good, for historic.
Yeah.
Scry 2, draw 2 is effectively, like, what, draw 3?
Effectively, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's not even worth talking about it like that, but I like this one.
Yeah, I think this is historic playable. I don't think this is modern playable. You just have so many better draw spells in modern to, like, pick from.
Yeah. Okay, then I'm going to jump ahead here to Cosima, God of the Voyage. By the way, I don't think we're going to get to black today, as promised, so it's going to be white and blue based on our time here.
Yep.
Cosima, God of the Voyage is 2 and a blue for a legendary creature god. It's a 2/4. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may exile Cosima. If you do, it gains whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control. If Cosima is exiled, you may put a Voyage counter on it. If you don't, return Cosima to the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it, and draw X cards, where X is the number of Voyage counters on it. Very confusing, but essentially it's kind of like, if you pass on the card draw now, you'll get like accumulating card draw later, right, when it's exiled.
Yep.
And then the flip side of it is this very, very sweet vehicle, 1 and a blue for a 3/3 legendary artifact vehicle. When a vehicle you control deals combat damage to a player, including this one, that is, that player exiles that many cards from the top of their library. You may play lands from among those cards for as long as they remain exiled, and it has crew 1.
Crew 1?
Crew 1, yeah.
That's so few crew.
Yeah, it's Smuggler's Copter. This is a hell of a lot of card. This promises quite a bit here. It really is kind of like a fixed Smuggler's Copter because it gives you the aggression of the 2-mana 3/3. It doesn't draw you cards. It gives you lands. But then the other side, it does draw you cards. Like, if you do want to, like, pay fairly for your card draw and, like, get it, you know, at a reasonable point in the game, you know, you can actually draw non-land cards with Cosima. Yeah. Granted, Smuggler's Copter really doesn't draw loots, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. This is a really good card. I think this is certainly playable in Pioneer. Or not Pioneer, Historic. In like tempo decks, or even in like maybe as a sideboard card control decks, but like I just don't know if this is gonna make it to modern. I'm not seeing it there.
Yeah, vehicles are tough. Upside is big here in that when you don't need the vehicle, you get a pretty like a very good card that makes up for the fact that you don't have creatures on the board, and this is like, oh, this is like the perfect creature to have when you don't have creatures.
Yeah, it's great.
So I like it. I do like it for Historic, for sure. I don't know where it belongs in there specifically, but it is just a value creature for maybe like a, like maybe even just like a Sultai mid-range type of deck. I don't know if there's something that exists that isn't just an Uro-based deck, but if one day Uro gets banned from that format, maybe there will be a little bit more life breathed into just like a fair mid-range style.
I mean, don't you want to play this with Uro? Because Uro gives you extra lands?
I don't know. It just seems so small town with Uro to me. I don't know.
That's true. I mean, you could just pre-roll a bazillion cards off this thing with Uro because, like, but maybe, yeah, you're right. Uro's just drawing you enough that you don't need this.
Yeah, probably.
All right. I'm passing in modern, but I'm buying historic.
Okay. All right, moving on. That's one. All right, there was one that I was just looking at that I didn't really consider before. I'll just keep moving here. We talked about Raven Form in the past. I think maybe we should just readdress that one for like historic purposes. 2 and a blue for a sorcery. Exile target artifact or creature. Its controller creates a 1/1 blue bird creature token with flying, and it has Foretell 1 blue. I don't know that this is necessarily historic playable in any of the decks that exist, but it is a very good piece of removal if you're like in need of this in like a sideboard, because it does something really specific. It takes care of an artifact with like for a mono blue deck that's like hungry for that opportunity in the sideboard, and I think that's something that blue doesn't get to do very often. So I don't know. I like that one.
I think the artifact removal piece of it in historic is good enough, so I think it's certainly historic playable, and I'd buy it.
Okay. Raven Farm. Okay. And then we've got Orvar the All-Form. This is 3 and a blue for a 3/3 shapeshifter. It's a legendary creature. It's a mythic. It's got changeling because it's a shapeshifter. Whenever you cast an instant or a sorcery spell, if it targets one or more other permanents you control, create a token that's a copy of one of those permanents. Whenever a spell or ability an opponent controls causes you to discard this card, create a token that's a copy of target permanent.
That's pretty good. Jesus. How much mana?
3 and a blue. 3/3 for 4.
I just think it's too many mana.
What can you do with this? There's got to be something really egregious that you can do with this.
So when a permanent's when an opponent makes you discard a permanent, or just a permanent's discarded?
Discard this card, Orvar. When Orvar gets discarded from your hand, you create a token as a copy of target permanent. I mean, that's like one of the best like Wiltleaf Leech type of effects that I've ever seen.
Copy target permanent. So
yeah. Target permanent. It's not even just your permanent. It's not permanent.
Yeah, that's really good. I don't know what the hell you'd target with it, though.
There's got to be something. I mean, at the very least, you get a land.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's not why you play it, though. Like, obviously, that's just like a little bit of defense built in. But when you cast an instant or sorcery, if it targets one or more permanents you control, create a token as a copy of those permanents. So, like, you can get multiple triggers of that. If you've got a spell that just, like, you know, has, like, electrolyze, right? You get two permanents out of an electrolyze. So, what do you... I mean, if you've already got the permanent in play, it's not like you're, like, polymorphing something into, like, an Emrakul in this case. But just making copies of something is just, like, more value for what you've already got.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's a combo there.
I don't know. Probably like some janky ETB thing that you could do.
Yeah.
I don't remember for allies if Jawari Shapeshifter, or not Jawari Shapeshifter, but Helivar Excavator is it's two toughness, because you could copy that thing and make copies of it and like use Jawari Shapeshifter in this to like mill your opponent, but like you could just do it better with like Rally. So like, these are the crazy things I'm thinking of. I just don't think this card is good enough.
It has 3 toughness.
Yeah, there you go. So you could electrolyze it, get a copy, mill some cards.
Yeah.
Use Jawari Shapeshifter, get another copy. Like, this is where I'm going, but it's like, that's a stretch, you know? Like,
is there something where, like, a dude can, like, fork a spell? Like what happens if you have a dual caster mage and like a 1 damage spell?
Then you would win the game as long as the dual caster mage doesn't die, right?
Or electrolyze and a dual caster mage, right? Because then you can do 1 to dual caster, 1 to your opponent.
Okay, so you cast the electrolyze. You have to target something.
Yeah, target dual caster. Yeah,
so you have to, well, you don't target the dual caster because the dual caster has to copy it, because it has to be on the stack for the dual caster to copy it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and right? Then, but the dual caster is copy
targets dual caster. Is it when it's targeted or when the spell resolves that the trigger happens on the guy? No, the new guy.
Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, if it targets one or more, yeah.
Okay, so the dual caster mage could just be in play. Yeah, so if you had something that had ETB copy a spell on it, you would be able to go infinite with an electrolyze or a forked bolt or something similar.
Mm-hmm.
So is there like a, because dual caster mage is not Pioneer legal.
It is historic legal.
Oh, it's historic legal?
Yeah.
Is it modern legal too? Did they print it in a modern set? Or
no, just... no, it's not modern legal.
So you could is Forked Bolt is Forked Bolt historic legal?
Forked Bolt. Yeah. I think there's a version of Forked Bolt that you can play in historic, but it's not Forked Bolt. Forked Bolt is not just historic legal.
Just some two-target burn spell, I guess. Cheap two-target burn spell.
Yeah, there's definitely something out there.
So there you go. That's your combo with this guy. Dualcaster Mage. I mean, it's kind of Splinter 20 in all honesty. Like, it's a flash 3-mana creature and a 4-mana creature and a 1-mana spell. So it's like Kiki. It's like Kiki combo.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that's playable in historic, right?
If not, I mean, come on. Stuff like this, people always try, and it's gonna show up somewhere. So I'm in. I want it.
Yeah, I'm in. We found the silly combo.
All right. In a similar vein, there's only two more blue ones, by the way. In a similar vein, there's a card called Mystic Reflection that does something like it. It's one in a blue for an instant. It says, choose target non-legendary creature. The next time one or more creatures or planeswalkers enter the battlefield this turn, they enter as copies of the chosen creature. But this has Foretell, which allows you to cast it for a single blue rather than two mana. It's already pretty affordable at one in a blue, but... this is like, you know, whatever spell lets you play, like, I don't know, Hordling Outburst or something where you get, like, three tokens. You know, there's got to be something that can, you can upgrade them into something nasty or some kind of weird kind of blinky. I don't know if blink does the thing. But
tokens and blink ain't it, man.
Yeah, tokens and blink isn't going to work, is it?
But Hero of Bladehold is... definitely the first thing I thought of, like making a bunch of Hero of Bladehold.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Like a good, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's historic legal, but
yeah. So there.
If it is.
So they wouldn't trigger a battalion because they would already be declared as attackers. The tokens.
Yeah, They wouldn't trigger Battlecry to make the tokens.
Or Battlecry, yeah.
Siege Gang Commander would be a good one. The Siege Gang Commander, like a thing that makes that tokens go infinite. Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
So, like,
you have to target it. Tokens. Yeah, oh, yeah. So, Siege Gang Commander enters the battlefield. You cast Mystic Reflection in response to the trigger. Target. Yeah. Yeah, that works. So, six mana.
Tokens.
Yep.
So, but any token maker makes infinite tokens or infinite copies of the creature. Actually, it's an unbreakable loop. Because you make tokens and then they become copies and you make tokens. Like, you can never get out of the loop, so it's like a draw. So, like, you have to have a way to enable, like, you have to have exactly mana echoes for Siege King Commander, like, for this to be playable.
Wait, that can't be. It's, hang on, let me read this card again. Choose target non-legendary creature. The next time one or more creatures or planeswalkers enter, it says the next time.
Oh, it's not every time. Never mind. So, you get a Siege King Commander gives you three Siege Gang Commanders, so you get nine tokens. Okay, not as broken as
I was. Yeah, I was going to say, because there are token makers in this set that are commons. I don't think they would just print like, yeah,
legal. They wouldn't just go big stupid. You're right. In all honesty, the thing that I can think of the most that makes sense is like, it's playable in modern if you pair it with like Sling Gang Commander.
Just giving
that you might a, be a big reach.
Yeah, that's a big reach. I'm gonna pass on this one, but it's kind of cute.
It's cool,
and it's I love Mirror Weave.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Mirror Weave. Don't get me wrong, but just not okay. Good enough. I don't.
All right, then the last one. This should be an easy one. Saw It Coming is one blue for an instant. It's a cancel counter target spell, but it has Foretell, which is one in a blue. So is this the upgrade to cancel that makes it playable?
Not in modern.
No, definitely not in modern. We have many better counter spells in modern, no doubt. But in historic, now let me compare this to like what else historic is looking at for counter spells, so you have like a little point of reference. Because remember, like I said, the blue white decks are pretty hungry for pieces. They're pretty tight.
So here's my that's the bar. Can you be better than Absorb?
Yeah.
Because if you can't be better than Absorb, you're not good enough.
Absorb's pretty damn good. It's a little tough to cast, but every time a new set comes out, the mana gets better, and we now have quite a bit of decent mana.
Yeah.
They also have Tails. They're like main decking Tails End because there's so much damn Uro in the set. Uro and Muxus. Sensor is a card that gets played a lot.
Yep. I don't think it's good enough.
Disallow is legal. Yeah, probably not. All right, so that concludes our episode this week. We've got we'll move on to black next time. I know we're gonna be like dangerously behind as we go through this, but we'll act like we're completely oblivious to what's actually going on in the world of modern and historic, and we'll stay committed to our decisions based on how we think these cards will pan out in those environments. It's very hard to keep up with these, you know, from the time that the set gets fully previewed and the time that the cards are actually legal, there's like, you know, just a matter of a couple of days. And so to get the whole set review in there is near impossible. So this is the way we have to do it.
Yep. Yep.
Anyways, thank you for listening and we'll catch you next time.
Yep.
Modern Metacall is a production of CardKnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with CardKnockLife offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardKnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading CardKnock Life content.